Next week, the former Justice of the Supreme Court of Queensland, Glenn Martin, is presenting a lecture at the Selden Society on Reds Under the Bed to mark 75 years since the Communist Party case. In 1951, Australia's High Court struck down the Menzies government's Communist Party Dissolution Act. Glenn describes the case as a constitutional landmark and one of the most dramatic collisions between executive and legislative power and judicial independence in Australian history. And I'm very pleased to say that Glenn Martin joins us now on Sunday Extra. Welcome to the program.
Thanks very much, Julia.
Glenn, putting aside the anniversary aspect, I wonder if you could tell us, firstly, why you decided to devote a lecture to the Communist Party case in 2026.
The principles in the case stand even though they are now 75 years old, and the force of them is still apparent throughout Australia. People don't worry so much about communist parties these days. If you consider communist regimes elsewhere, they're not like they used to be. Things have changed. And so there is, I think, a view that this is an old-fashioned case and it doesn't have anything to tell us. But there could be nothing further from the truth. We need to be reminded from time to time about the importance of this case and what it decided.
Speaking of reminders, could you tell us what the Communist Party Dissolution Act actually did?
It, by force of the act, dissolved the Communist Party of Australia. It allowed the Governor General to make declarations with respect to organisations and individuals, in effect saying, you are communist and therefore you may not be employed in the Commonwealth Public Service or in any federally registered trade union. It confiscated all the property of the Communist Party and the funds went back into general revenue. Now, the members of the Communist Party knew this was on the way and there was a mad scramble to sell property before the act came into force. And there were scenes of filing cabinets being wheeled out of Communist Party headquarters in Sydney and those sorts of things. So there wasn't so much to confiscate, but the challenge to the act was made within hours of the act becoming law.
And to put a bit of a political context on this legal case, the Menzies government had been elected in 1949 and it had campaigned on a strongly anti-communist platform. These days, we tend to think of mandates of governments, and I know that's not something that necessarily the High Court would take into account, but in political terms, would it be fair to say that the Menzies government had a mandate to dissolve the Communist Party?
Oh, I think that's correct. And while you're right that the High Court wouldn't take that into account, in order to understand the case, it's important to understand the political and historical context, and that is very much part of it.
Could you expand on that context for us?
Well, Robert Menzies had been Prime Minister from 1939 to 1941, leading the United Australia Party, which was a different party to the current United Australia Party.
No affiliation with Clive Palmer back in those days.
No affiliation. And he, at that time, always expressed anti-communist views. Now, you've got to remember also that the Russian Revolution had only taken place a couple of decades before this. So what they had before them was the fear of what Russia was doing and then what China was doing later in 1949. But there was in the Second World War a regulation which dissolved the Australian Communist Party because the party was effectively anti the Australian government for the first part of the Second World War because Russia had a treaty with Nazi Germany. That treaty broke down because, well, Hitler decided that he'd invade Russia, which tends to bring treaties to an end. As a result, the Communist Party flipped and then opposed the war. And although they'd been dissolved, they still continued in operation.
That's interesting. So they'd been dissolved before. Had the previous dissolution been subject to a High Court challenge?
It had. There's a case called Jehovah's Witness case from about 1943, I think, where the regulation which dissolved the party was held invalid, but on grounds that quite different to the ones advanced in the later High Court case. It was a different type of regulation.
On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with former Justice of the Supreme Court of Queensland, Glenn Martin, about his upcoming Selden Society lecture on the Communist Party case. Glenn, we'll come to the outcome of the case in a minute. But before we do, one of the most remarkable things about this case is the extraordinary cast of characters in the legal drama, including Doc Evatt, who was a former High Court judge, former Labor Attorney General, and at the time he appeared in the case, was the deputy leader of the Labor opposition, returning to his former court to argue that the Menzies government's Communist Party Dissolution Act was invalid. Could you tell us a bit more about the notables who were in the room when the Communist Party case was being heard and decided?
It was an extraordinary group of people. Garfield Barwick led the case for the Commonwealth. He defended the legislation. He had only a couple of years beforehand attacked Commonwealth legislation in the bank nationalisation case, a case that went for weeks in the High Court and then again in the Privy Council.
And which Doc Evatt had also argued and lost.
Evatt lost the bank nationalisation case and he appeared then as Attorney General, which is very unusual. Oh. It happens very rarely. Mark Dreyfus did it, I think, once, but not in a case that went nearly 7 weeks. So Barwick led a platoon of silks and juniors. Doc Evatt appeared for some federally registered unions. There were other members of the profession lined up. It was so crowded in the courtroom that the barristers were sitting in the first and second rows of the public gallery. There just wasn't enough room for them. So we had Barwick, a giant of the Australian bar, Evatt, an intellectual powerhouse, but troubled in many ways. He was suffering probably then from the problems that really came to grip him later in his life. On the bench, there was Chief Justice Latham, who had been Attorney General and Deputy Prime Minister. There was probably juristic giant of the common law world, Sir Owen Dixon. Wilfred Fuligar, who'd only recently been appointed but was a terrific lawyer, and others who had just recently been appointed, like Frank Kitto. Mr. Justice McTiernan was there. He had been appointed about 20 years before that and went on to serve for another 16 or 17 years to become the longest serving judge in Australia's High Court history. So it was a big case. The court was packed. There were dozens of police at Darlinghurst just to control a crowd. Most unusual for anything to happen like that in the High Court.
Who actually represented the Communist Party, Glenn?
The Communist Party was represented by a Queensland barrister called Fred Patterson. He had a couple of other barristers with him, Ted Laurie, who became a Queen's Counsel in Victoria after that, and another Queensland barrister, also a member of the Communist Party, Max Julius. Fred was unusual in a number of respects, but mainly because he was the only person ever to be elected to any Australian parliament while a member of the Communist Party. And he was a member for Bowen in the state of Queensland from 1944 to 1950.
Amazing, yeah. So he'd had a direct personal interest in the case.
Well, he did. It affected him directly. It affected Ted Laurie. It affected Max Julius likewise.
So what actually happened in the case? I'll ask you the easy question first, Glenn. What was the outcome of the Communist Party case?
Well, the bill was held to be invalid by a majority of 6-1. Chief Justice Latham was in the minority. The major decisions are those given by Dixon and Fuligar. So that came as a surprise to some, particularly the commentators. Remember that in that area, the only source of news were newspapers and radio, nothing else. So that's where you found out what was happening. And the newspapers were generally in favour of the Act. They were anti-communist and they wanted to see the Act succeed. So that when it was knocked over, there was a big reaction to it. But there were complaints about the court. The decision was accepted. And most of the commentary went on about what can we do now?
Yeah, it certainly does seem to be an outcome which was contrary to the prevailing political sentiments of the time. So we know how the case fell. Here's the tougher question, I think, though, Glenn. Why did the court rule that way? The majority in particular, and I think I can give a bit of a spoiler alert here. It seems like every judge had a different reason for reaching the same conclusion.
Well, there were 7 judges and there were 7 judgments. And while the reasoning of Dixon and Fuligar is similar, apart from Sir William Webb, who was a former Chief Justice of Queensland, but on the court, the others were along the same lines. The basis for the Act put forward by the Commonwealth was, we have power to do this because the Constitution gives us what is called the defence power under Section 51. And we're able to enact this because it comes within that power. There were other arguments made, but that was generally what it was on about. The problem for the Commonwealth was that it was relying upon a declaration in the legislation that said the Communist Party and its adherents are people who can be dealt with under the defence power.
Yes, it said it's necessary for the security and defence of Australia and for the execution and maintenance of the Constitution and the laws of the Commonwealth for the Communist Party to be dissolved, asserted as a fact in the preamble.
Yes, and to put it bluntly, the court said, you can't do that. You can't, Parliament can't make that decision. Only a court can make that decision. And had the Commonwealth enacted legislation which said that people could be prosecuted or declarations could be sought, then there probably would not have been the same problem that the majority found.
And Glenn, did the majority find that you just can't dissolve a political party like that relying on the defence power?
Yes. Because it held that Parliament simply does not have that power. It held that the only part of the government that can do that is the judiciary. There needs to be a finding by the judiciary, by the High Court eventually, that the power is there to be used and that the people subject to the power come within the definitions in the Act.
You mentioned that a former Attorney General and then Chief Justice Latham dissented. Now, you don't hold back about Chief Justice Latham's dissent in your lecture. I think you describe it as poorly written and badly expressed. Could you give us a well-expressed summary of that poorly written judgment?
Oh, bluntly, he said that when it comes to the question of defence and national security, it's for the Parliament to decide. Parliament decides whether it is necessary for the defence of the nation for this to occur. He took a very broad view of the power. He had a strong anti-communist for decades, both when he was at the bar and when he was in politics, and he maintained that view. He was firm in his belief and he was not going to be shifted from it.
This was obviously a defeat for the Menzies government, and that meant that the Dissolution Act didn't take effect, but the Menzies government continued in its attempts to take action against the Communist Party, putting a referendum to the people over whether there should be a new head of power in the Constitution specifically to deal with communists. What was the result of that referendum, Glenn?
The referendum failed. Three states voted in favour of the change to the Constitution and three states voted against. And because you need a majority of states, it was defeated. If you look at it, though, from the total number of votes cast, there were about 4.75 million votes cast. And across Australia, the no vote was only about 52,000 more than the yes vote. So it was pretty close.
And presumably, if that had passed, then a very different debate would have taken place in the High Court.
Oh, if that had passed, it would have. But the proposal in the referendum related to the Communist Party. It would have been a more confined power. The power that the Parliament sought to use in the Dissolution Act could easily have been turned by another government against a different body. If they had said that a particular party was a danger to Australia, that it was preaching sedition, then had the High Court not found as it did, it would have left the Parliament with an enormous power to dissolve parties which it declared to be contrary to the defence of the Commonwealth or seditious behaviour or something like that. So the High Court's decision was massive in that sense. It prevented not just the Menzies government, but any other government at any time from doing something similar.
Speaking of something similar, it is interesting how many resonances there are in this 75-year-old case of events today. Even the discussion about the preamble does resonate with the debate about, you know, whether you're entitled to your own facts in declaring what you believe, which is sort of what the Menzies government had tried to do in the preamble. But another resonance, I think, is that after the Bondi massacre, the Albanese government enacted new laws which prohibit hate groups. How are those laws different from the Communist Party Dissolution Act? Or why wouldn't those laws be as vulnerable to being struck down by the High Court as the Menzies Government Act was?
Well, Julian, they may be. I haven't seen the argument being put forward. I've read about it. There would, though, be this difference. Since the Communist Party dissolution case, there have been decisions by the High Court relating to freedom of political communication. And it may be argued, and I can only put it as high as that, it may be argued that the Commonwealth legislation is contrary to that implied protection. But it's got a long way to go. And I think it's going to involve more than just the issues of the defence power and the like in that discussion. The federal government's done that. Some state governments have likewise done that, but there's a different constitutional background to state governments doing it.
Ben Martin, thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
Thanks very much, Juliet.
And Glenn is a former senior judge administrator of the Supreme Court of Queensland, and his Selden Society lecture is on the 17th of April. It's titled Reds Under the Bed, 75 Years Since the Communist Party Case.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.